Talking with TD.
Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee.
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Terrell Davenport.
Put up a shut up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
1025 The Game.
Here we go. 0-1, not 1-0, but it is all right. You are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. We got a lot to get into. Obviously, that super frustrating loss for the Titans and for their fans. I know you guys are really disgusted at it, but hey, you live to see another day, and here we are in the midst of getting ready for their Sunday matchup against the Jets, the home opener, Nissan Stadium. You guys, come on in, pack it up. Make it a live place, a place that you know, you guys can see your Titans. Go ahead and get down, man. The defense, they did their thing. So we'll get into that. We got Tavondre Sweat at his locker. We got one-on-one with Nicholas Petit-Ferrere. We got Jets, ESPN NFL Nation Jets reporter Rich Cimini on. We're going to get Chris Sanders, old fish eye fool, talking a little shop there. You know, always good to get a visit from Tyrone Hill. Then we got David James and Parker over here.
Yes, sir.
Ready to rock, man. It's a loaded show. So let's start off with Will Levis. Or let's just, all right. So here's the thing, right? You know, you look at this game all week. They talked about the importance of getting off to a fast start. And yet three and outs on the first couple of drives. And you saw Brian Callahan call the play action. You get Nick Vinette in the flat, and he catches that. And you just see them start to get into a rhythm. And that was a really good thing. They were able to put together a drive, as Callahan called it, getting bites at the apple. And they had two scoring drives. I mean, we're talking about the one was like 8 minutes. The first scoring drive, I believe, was 6 minutes, and it ended with, you know, a fabulous block by you know, Dylan Raidens. You had Nick Vinette sealing the end and Raidens pin. It was your basic pin and pull, right? And Raidens pulled and he got out there. He got a good block on somebody, Pollard. That's all he needed was that little crease, snuck right through. It was a lot like Frank Gore. It reminded me of Frank Gore. And I used to always call Frank Gore a cat. I'm like, if this dude could get his head through, his rest of the body's going to go and he's going to get through the crease. And that's what, I mean, it wasn't that tight, but I mean, it reminded me of that type of situation where, you know, you just need one little crease of daylight, as Gale Sayers used to say, and he was gone. And really good job by Pollard of racing into the end zone. He got there. You know, he outraced Kevin Byard and got in there. And I like the way Brian Callahan, he saw something on that, went right back to it the next play. Cause before that, that play, you know, it was, I believe, a 7 yard gain, I want to say, if I remember correctly, but it was basically the same thing. And then they went back to it and to success. So, you know, they went in there, you ran the ball, you stuffed it down the Bears' throat. Soldier Field was really quiet, fellas. Like, it was quiet, right? And then you came back, you got the field goal, the defense was holding. And then, the kickoff return, you know, what can you say about that? That set it up. Like, that, in my opinion, was the key, but the initial turning point, you know, and then obviously the block punt for the touchdown, and that stadium got life again. But before that, you had the throw from Levis to Chigakonkwo. Great job of attacking the football, going up and getting it. And Levis, you know, stepping up in the pocket. He didn't drift or anything like that. He stepped up. And I remember, you know, when he threw it, I'm like, ooh, but he was able to get it to him before Tyreek Stevenson could turn and be able to see. And, you know, Okonkwo knew the ball was coming and he went and got it and he scored, you know, and it's interesting because a lot of people were on Chig and saying, you know, he's not this and he's not that. Well, he was that on that play. And I think he's another example of why you have to have patience. So it's 17-3 at that point. You get the block punt. I don't know what to say. You know what I mean? It was just like, what are you guys doing? And it was really unfortunate, how the rest of it played out. And it was just one of those things where you saw the lead just continue to get salted away. You know, they couldn't get first downs. The second half, you know, their in no rhythm. You have Eberflus, you know, he decided to go wide, you know, and rush those guys from those wide nine alignments. And, you know, he was sending the corners, the nickel on blitzes and just attacking different ways. And that's where the bad play happened, right? Kyler Gordon, he blitzed off the right side. Levis, I'm not sure if he saw him for sure. He must have felt him because he did start to drift to his left, but he kind of, it goes back to what the way I was saying you have to attack Caleb Williams, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you got the one set, you know, chases the gazelle to the other set of lions. And this time it was just two lions, right? You had Kyler Gordon come and he kind of flushed him to DeMarcus Walker, and DeMarcus Walker, had what should have been a sack, but Levis decided to throw the football. And talked to Tyler Boyd, and Tyler Boyd had mentioned how, you know, he was a little, because you have your scramble keys, right? But see, the thing you got to remember is Levis wasn't truly scrambling. Like, he took a couple steps and he was right there, Walker, that is. And Boyd was thinking, like, hey, he's going to go down. You know what I mean? He's going to go down. And then he threw the football, and, you know, that right there is the sound effects of mm-hmm. what was going on in Boyd's mind. Mm-hmm. You know, as Bill Belichick said, like, what are you going to gain out of that? Exactly. You're not going to gain anything out of it, right? Exactly. Even if Boyd did catch it, as Belichick mentioned, all right, you gained 2 yards. You still got a punt. Here's the thing. If you punt, I know you had to block. But Stonehouse had averaged 53.8 yards per punt. You punt the ball, you pin them deep. This is an offense that got 148 yards total offense. That's what they got against that defense. 148 yards, zero touchdowns, zero.
Zero, guy. The defense played so well, and like, you got to trust your defense.
Trust your defense.
Like, I was so perplexed when I saw it. I was just like, what are you doing?
It's that hero ball.
Exactly.
It's that hero ball, man. Tina Turner.
Mm-hmm.
You got to play the song. you got to play it. You know, we don't need another hero. That's the thought process that Levis has to understand. And it's tough when you have a player like that, the gift and the curse. But here's the thing. That defense, they gave up a couple field goals, right? Now, one of the field goals was after a 66-yard kickoff return. Right. And the other one came after Daryl Taylor beat J.C. Latham, and it was the strip sack. And even that was in scoring position. But guess what? They didn't score. They didn't get in the end zone. It's mind boggling. It's mind boggling. And, you know, I understand fans are upset. Trust me, Will Levis was upset, too. Like, he he said so. I don't remember blatantly giving away a game like that. But what you have to have is that short memory. I want to play this Levis quote because I know people are going to dislike that, but I want to kind of dissect it a little bit. So listen to what Levis said about not losing any sleep on Sunday night.
Yeah, I mean, it's just coming to the work the same way I have every day, regardless of what happens the day before. And I spent the MO since day one. I feel like it's also a part of my game that I've improved on a lot in my career. There have been times where a game like that would have lingered for days, weeks, and really just kept getting to me. But I didn't lose sleep some of that, you know. I knew that I'm a good quarterback in this league, and obviously a lot of things to get better on. But watching that tape, I saw that confidence, and knowing that it's just kind of a fluke play that I can definitely learn from. So, I've still got all the confidence in the world in this team and everything. Just got to come to work every day the same way, regardless of what happens.
You have to have a short-term memory, right? And by the way, that jugs machine that you hear in the background, the hands behind that they belong to Chig Okonkwo. He's done that almost every practice.
Yep.
You know, while the pressures are going on, he's still getting the work in. But yeah, I mean, you got to have that short-term memory, and you can't let a play like that linger to the next play, let alone to the next game. So I understand people will be upset. They say he didn't lose any sleep, but you got to, what's the thing you always hear them say? Man, we got to flush that down the toilet. You got to flush it, flush it, flush it, get rid of it. Understand it was a bad play, a boneheaded play. Learn from it, though. That's exactly the big part. You got to learn from it, and you have to understand, and this was something I remember, Doug Peterson, Frank Wright, John DeFilippo, they would always preach to Carson Wentz, understand when the journey's over. Mm-hmm. He didn't understand that. And that was a problem, and that's what happened. You got to move it on, you know. And I think the fact that this is a guy who coming out was known for being a perfectionist and known for harping on things and it rolling over, the fact that this guy is saying he didn't lose any sleep, that's actually a good thing. But what's a better thing is don't make that same mistake again. Don't do it. Now, I don't know if Will Levis is that dude, right? You know, I had my beliefs coming in that, you know, I think he could be that dude. And I still think there's a chance, but you got to cut out these plays. You got to hit those throws. Calvin Ridley had, I don't know if it was Jalen, I think it was Tyreek Stevenson. He had him beat. You overshot it. You got to connect on those. You, especially in a game like this where points are at a premium, you got to connect on those. There was some bad, a lot of bad in that. But, you know, at the same time, there's some good. The bad outweighed the good. So you got to get things together. And this is his year, right? He's got to prove that he could be that quarterback for them. And, you know, I understand it's only his 11th game coming up, but you got to do better. You got to do better. And a part of doing better is getting that protection in front of him. I wanted to bring you guys a sit down that we had with Nicholas Petit-Ferrer. Always like getting to sit down at their locker and talk a little shop with them. So here's Nicholas Petit-Ferrer.
You got to be out there, you know, for the first time. How was it to, you know, get back on the field and get back in the mix?
I mean, it's a lot of fun, dude. I mean, it's the NFL. Like, yeah. To get to play football again, I didn't get a chance to do that a lot last year, you know, being suspended and then being injured. I missed it a lot. And I was just super happy to be out there, you know. Whether it was home or away game, like, I was just, like, geeked up just to be on the field and actually get, like, real reps and get competitive, so I was excited.
What did you miss the most while you were gone?
I miss being around the guys. Like, it's kind of that, like, day-to-day of, like, being around the same people. But, like, a lot of people think, like, you know, when I don't treat this as a job, but some people do.
Mm-hmm.
And they think, like, oh, I got to see my same coworkers every single day. It's like, no, like, these guys are, like, Rand and like Brian, they try to make sure we have like really cool dudes and really fun guys to be around. So like that's something that I missed last year, that I wasn't around. I wasn't having fun with all the guys because I was away, you know. And then when I got hurt, I felt the same thing. Like, I didn't have the same camaraderie. I didn't have the same like grind. Have the days, the great days. Like, I didn't have those.
I know you mentioned it not being a job, but you do have a job to do. And when that doesn't get done, how has the feedback been from Bill Callahan and is it Scott? I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Fuchs. Yeah, I didn't want to say it the other way.
And Jim, Matt Jones. Yeah. They're critical, but it's out of a place of making sure that I get what I need.
Yeah.
And there's a level of relationship that you have for someone to be super critical, but you take what they say with open arms. Because sometimes you may get criticized and you just kind of shy away from it because maybe you just don't have a good enough relationship with the people. I feel like with Callahan and then like Bill and Brian and Matt and Scott, like whenever I get critiqued by them, it doesn't come as a sense of like rejection. It comes with like they're really caring about me. Like it's something that like if like my family were to come to me and give me a critique, I'd take it the same way.
Nice. Now when you look at this past game, everybody talked about getting off to a hot start. You guys did that. As that lead is getting salted away, like what's going through your mind? Is there like, you know, 3 points, then it's 17-10, then it's, you know, so on and so forth.
The mindset is stop the bleeding. You know, like that's what was happening, and we just need to find a way to stop the bleeding, find a tourniquet, and stop the bleeding. So, you know, we didn't really do that last game. That's something that we can learn from and get better at. You know, it's the NFL, so like you got to think like you're gonna get punched in the mouth at some point. So you got to be able to combat that and get back to square. So that's something that we just got to get better at.
And you guys were able to get that running game going early. You know, how good was that to be able to, you know, fire off and be the attacker?
That felt great. Dude. I mean, that's getting a chance to impose our will and being able to fire off the ball, be tough, be physical. Like that's something that we always want to do.
There you have it, right there. You know. just really good to hear him just a lot more comfortable than he is. And you see the personality starting to come out. I enjoyed that conversation. You know, another conversation that we enjoyed was talking to Tavondre Sweat. It was working to get the one-on-one, but a guy like that is just tough to time it up. So there are some, you know, other reporters in here, but I just love the meatloaf. And I was shocked he didn't know who Haloti Ngata was, but or that he didn't watch him. But let's get into Tavondre Sweat.
Y'all seen it, my senior year at UT, the real UT, by the way. I mean, y'all seen it, so, I mean, I really don't have much to say.
And do you feel like you gave another pretty good example to me?
I mean, I'm not here to give examples to other people. I'm here to just play the game I love and be the best I can be.
That arm over, the quick arm over that you use, is that something that you've, you know, developed over time? Or?
I mean, that move been around for so long, but anyway, I still call it the T-Sweat move. It's a good move to use, you know, especially for a big guy like me. They're not really thinking I'm gonna move side to side, mainly just down the middle. So,
who are some of the guys that you've watched over time? You know, you being a bigger guy, watching interior guys.
I would say I watch Big Vita.
Okay.
Big Wilford, Big Sue, Cox, all those type of guys.
All
the bigger guys.
You ever watch Haloti Ngata from Baltimore?
No. I haven't got to him.
Very similar game, that's why I asked. Big guy with good feet.
What did you think of, did you see what Brian Bollinger's nickname was for you?
The T-Clan?
Yeah. What do you like it or not so much?
I mean, it is what it is, but my nickname, Meatloaf, so. Yeah.
How'd you get that?
My godmother.
Do you like meatloaf?
Yeah, call me, if you say meatloaf, I'm going to answer.
How'd you get the meatloaf?
Huh?
Eat a lot of meatloaf?
So the crazy thing is it was a basketball game. I was playing basketball when I was young, and out of nowhere, it's just like, you know meatloaf? And since then, that's been my nickname.
You ever seen Old School?
The Old School meatloaf?
The Old School movie? Calling for the meatloaf?
No, I haven't seen it.
You mentioned basketball, and we talked a little bit about that before, but the footwork like that you gained, you know, how much did that help you?
I mean, I should have went D3. You know what I'm saying? basketball, I miss it. I love that sport, too. It's a great sport to play, especially for big guys like me, you know. What's that one? What's his name? He's pretty good. Basketball in the NFL now, O-lineman
basketball.
Gates back in the day?
No, it's O-lineman that play now. He good at basketball, y'all don't know?
I can't think of
it. I think he played for Cleveland.
I couldn't tell you.
But, you know, just seeing big guys like that playing basketball is pretty exciting. Gotcha.
So the basketball player, shout out Brandon Thorne, O-line specialist, DeJuan Jones. DeJuan Jones is the basketball player. He had D1 offers in football and basketball, but obviously we know he ended up playing football. He was 6'8", 375. I hate to deal with that in the post, but I just love the personality and the comfort level that Sweat has coming out. I am going to have to put him on to Haloti Ngata, though, because
you have to.
Haloti Ngata was a dancing bear, had similar, the same size, man, but yeah, I'm going to have to tell Coach Rocker to teach him. You know, Sam Adams, Nick Suss mentioned Sam Adams also. That's another good one for him to watch. But yeah, I just like the personality coming out. I love how he is as far as, you know, distancing himself from the foolishness that was tagged to his name, obviously by his own doing, but to be able to rise above that is definitely being good. So we're going to go ahead and go to a break. We'll be right back. We got Run TMC. We need to get into a lot with this game that we just saw and the game coming up.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD. Run from the DMC. For you. Fresh.
That's right, you hear the music as it fades and the lights dim. Where are we going? And now, coming to you live starting for your Indiana Pacers at center. Number 25 out of the University of Mississippi State, Eric Dampier.
And now, starting for the Denver Nuggets, T.R. Dunn.
I thought you were about to call me Lafayette Lever. Shoot. What you mean? I used to like those old Nuggets teams.
Man, that's, I grew up watching them, man. Jokers, man. They had the little bitty shorts, had the perfect afro, mustache, looked like Jeff Fisher, all that crazy stuff. What's going on with your boss?
Oh, nothing much, man. Just, you know, another day, another dollar. Titans fans, absolutely. I know they want to holler after last game. And hey, you know, we got to get into that, really, because, you know, it was a tale of two halves, and it's crazy. Yeah. You know, so many people focus on the second half adjustments, but I like how Brian Callahan mentioned how it's a series-to-series thing, and the teams that win the best, they do that the best. So that was a great point that he brought up. But I want to get into, right off the bat, your thoughts on that throw that Will Levis had. The pick six, you know, how egregious that was.
It was huge. I mean, you have the momentum and you're doing some good things. Then all of a sudden, or you have a chance to try to win the game and you throw an interception, it just puts a bad taste in your mouth. I think that for Will Levis, when you start to become a mature quarterback, and I'm not saying when I say mature quarterback, that means mature in the game. So people don't take it out of context. Is when I say mature in the game, is throw the ball away and live another down, because, you know, you have a situation to where you throw an interception, not just throw an interception, you throw a pick six. And when you throw a pick six, it just leaves a bad taste in your mouth. He just got to be smart with the football and make sure he makes the correct plays.
Yeah, I mean, that's the facts. And I think, you know, it's that Tina Turner. She made a song about it. You want to hear it? Here it goes. We don't need another hero. And that's the song that just has to play in his earpiece over and over again. As a receiver, like watching the play, right? And if you look at it, not to say that, you know, the bulk of the blame shouldn't be on Levis, but what are your thoughts on Tyler Boyd and just the way, should he have worked his way back to the ball as aggressively, or even tried to box out Tyreek Stevenson?
But see, here's the wild thing about it. It wasn't really a scramble play. You know what I'm saying? It was just that, you know, he got rushed out the pocket and he tried to do like a little flip. As a wide receiver, 1,000%, you know, football 101, you got to come back to the football. But I think Tyler Boyd didn't know if he was scrambling or was he just going to throw the ball away. But in both senses, the quarterback's got to throw the ball away, but also Boyd's got to come back to the football. So they're both wrong on the same situation. But at the end of the day, this is what we talk about, two guys being on the same page. And when you got to be on the same page, you got to know as a quarterback, I got to throw the ball away or I got to throw it to a spot to where only the wide receiver can catch the football. And he threw it to a place where only the defensive back can catch it.
You know, honestly, I think Boyd was surprised that Levis threw the ball. I don't think he believed he was going to throw it. So that's a good point you make there. Let's also look at the receiver play. Calvin Ridley, there was a really good throw where Levis, he stepped up in the pocket and delivered a strike, but you had the downfield throws, right? And well, what would you say went wrong? There were two opportunities that were missed.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. It's kind of like, I'm going to ask you this question. You can answer. If you put on the same record, what's going to happen?
It should play the same song.
You're going to keep playing the same song. What's the same song we've been hearing in camp? Overthrows. They haven't been connecting on the long ball. We keep hearing that over and over. And if you don't get that right in practice, you're not going to get it right in the game. And I'm not saying they can't, because it just takes time, because these guys have never played with each other before. But at the end of the day, he's got to make those throws. I mean, he's wide open. And I just think that if he just, you know, takes a little bit off it, I mean, you got a touchdown as opposed to an incomplete pass.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. What do you make of the way that they started? How critical was it to come out to that? Because it was almost like the perfect start, if you ask me.
I love it because here's the thing that I love about the whole situation. I know the running game was great and all that, but I love the different formations that were in. You had 11 personnel. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had 12 personnel. You had so many things that kept the defensive coordinator, you know, off balance. And just watching the offensive line, they were mauling those jokers, the Chicago Bears earlier in the game. I mean, they were hats on hats. There was like a little pull that Raidens, you know, made where he made a block on, I can't remember who the player was, but he made a block to spring Pollard. So they were doing some good things. They were running the football, you know, the offensive line was playing physical, and they were creating those lanes to where Pollard can slip through and make some plays. So, you know, I know everybody's kind of upset about the loss, but there's still a lot of things you can really, really build on.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. There is a lot to build on, but there's a lot that has to improve. And you mentioned the offensive line. What are your thoughts on, like, that pressure that started to come in the second half? You know, they widened things out. They started sending their corners, their nickels at times. So what do you make of that?
You know what? That's got to be on the quarterback. And I'm going to tell you that's going to be a quarterback because you got to understand where the pressure's coming from. And if you look at one of the plays in the game where he got pressured, it was to where – I think it was a nickel back or the cornerback, you know, blitzed off the slot. He blitzed off the slot. You Levis is looking the other way. He's got to understand where the pressure's coming from, because if the safety's scooting over a little bit, that means somebody's coming off the slot. So those are the little things that when you watch film and say, okay, I got to know where the pressure's coming from. I got to know when there's zone blitzing. I got to know and watch the safety to where when the pressure comes, then now the clock goes off. Then I got to get the ball off early. So even though we're looking at these things and we're saying, oh, he needs to do this, he can do that, all the things that we saw with Will Levis in this offense, it's all correctable. It's all correctable. Just go and look at film. Look at the tendencies of the defense. Look at where they blitz on third down. Look at where they blitz on second down. Look at where the dog blitzes are coming. Because you got to understand, if you know where the pressure's coming from, you're going to understand that I got to get the ball out quick because why? Somebody's coming.
Well, how about the defense, right? This is a team that held Caleb Williams to under 100 passing yards, 93 to be exact. You know, DJ Moore, Roma Dunze, Keenan Allen, they were all quiet. Now, they were getting open. There were some times where they were open, but how do you like the way the secondary was able to work against that Bears trio?
I loved it a lot, and I'm going to tell you why. Is on the first play of the game, it went covering. What does that mean? They were getting square in your mustache. The cover two man is two safety high and pressing the wide receivers. They were in their face the first play of the game to say, okay, you know what? We're going to have a dogfight at the line of scrimmage. We're not giving you any space. You're going to have to work to get to where you need to get. But I love what they're doing. I love the aggressiveness. I love, you know, the cornerback Snead and Awuzie and all the guys that were in those guys' face. So, yeah, even though they lost the game, look at the performance that not just the secondary but the defensive front. Starting with Sweat. Sweat made some good swim moves and some good spin moves and had, you know, Caleb Williams off his spot many a times. You held an explosive offensive team to 147 yards. That's something you can build on.
So this week you're going from a team with three number one candidates to a team with pretty much one, right? Garrett Wilson, he is the guy, right? Yep. We didn't see LeJarius Sneed travel much, but this week I would imagine we see that as a receiver, right? You know, let's say you're going into a game against Cincinnati and you know Ashley Ambrose is going to travel with you. Right. What's your thought process? How do you approach that?
You know, I what I did is I studied their best corner. You know, but also I would study the defense because, you know, when I was a rookie, it was like, okay, we'll go man-to-man over here. We'll put just anybody on the rookie because we don't think the rookie's going to do anything. But what I had to do is I had to study these guys. I had to study what they do on defense. I had to study the technique of, you know, if Ashley Ambrose, that used to play with Cincinnati, what does he do? Is he shading inside? If he's shading inside, what is he trying to take away? You know, what does he do with his hands? What does he do with his feet? What is he looking for in the backfield? So if I knew that I had any inclination that, you know, that they were going to put that the defensive back was going to follow me, I had to make sure I came up with a game plan. It's just kind of like this. I remember one of the best defensive backs of all time. This is my opinion, is Dale Carter. You know, when I was sitting studying film with Les Steckel, he said this. He said that, you know, when he's at the line of scrimmage, he's going to wait till you do all those little choppy moves at the line of scrimmage. And the last one, he's going to jam you. So, Chris, you got to come up with a game plan. If it doesn't work to where sometimes you can chatter, when I say chatter, that means move your feet right and left to get him off his spot to do that. But he said sometimes you got to just go. And when I say just go, quick move and just go to get him, you know, thinking that, okay, he changes it up. So what I had to do to answer your question is I had to study my guy, look at his tendencies, and guarantee that I was going to beat him. But if he went man-to-man press, the band's going to stand up, and it's going to be a touchdown. That's how I looked at it.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's 100% the way that you have to approach it. I'm assuming, looking at L'Jarius Sneed, that's how you would approach going against him?
No, 100%. And I've been studying him anyway. The one thing he wants to do is he wants to choke at the line of scrimmage. I mean, and you got to watch his footwork. I'm going to give you a perfect example. When I went against Deion Sanders, I knew when he was going to do the quick jam. And the reason why I knew he was going to do a quick jam is he would put one of his legs back, cocked back. It's kind of like a gun. He's getting ready to shoot. But if he stayed square, he was just trying to ride me and put his hands on me to try to get me off my, spot or get the timing off. I knew he was going to do that. Why? Because I studied film. So I knew in my mind, inside, if he's looking inside, he's looking to see what the snap count is, and he has his leg cocked back, and right when the snap count is going on, he's going to do a quick jam. So the same thing with Sneed. Sneed is a guy who loves to put his hands on you. We saw what he did with Tyreek Hill. We saw what he did against A.J. Brown. We saw those things. So if I was preparing myself for Sneed, what I would do is I know he likes to get his hands on you. Say I'm an X receiver. If I'm an X receiver, I know that I'm eventually 9 times out of 10, I'm going to be on the line. So what I would do, this is the savviness of a vet, is I will point to the ref and say I'm on. And right when he gives me the signal that says I'm on, I reset again, and then I kind of push back a little bit to create a little space so I can do, my little chatter moves or getting a guy off the spot, and that's how I would handle Sneed.
Yeah, no, that's a veteran move right there. That's a very veteran move. You check to get the approval, then you take that step back. That's pretty smooth right there. I've never heard that. I like that a lot, man. That's dope.
That's what I did against Derek Carter. I did that against Derek Carter. Yes.
Get that extra little bit of space.
Yes, because his arms are long. Yes.
Yeah. You got that Metroid arms. Go-go gadget arms. While we're on the defense, though, let's talk a little bit about that tandem they have on the inside, man. Jeffrey Simmons and Tavondre Sweat. These guys.
Oh, Lord.
Sweat, really, I love what he did. It seemed like he's, working to prove that, a lot of the things coming out about him were false, And I think this first game was a good start towards that.
I think it was. I mean, here's what I love about this big guy is he has great technique. I mean, if you watch one of the plays that he did, he made a little quick jab and did a little swim move. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And his feet are so nimble. Even though he weighs 300 and some pounds, I'm not going to say his weight. Let's say 360, 370. But he plays like he's 320. I mean, he's good off the line of scrimmage. He's got a good punch. He's got a good bull rush. He's got a good swim move. He's got a good spin move. So, him getting more experience and him getting more plays, he's going to be even better. And I'm going to tell you something. If he keeps doing what he's doing, he is going to be a force to reckon with.
Absolutely. I gave the comparison for him to Haloti Ngata, a big guy nimble on the feet, but so powerful also. They're very similar players, man. So, yeah, I like what you said there. Before we get you out of here, obviously, we got to get the prediction. How do you think this thing will work out? 2-0-1 teams facing off at Nissan Stadium.
Ooh, I mean, the New York Jets had a big loss against San Fran. Titans lost against the Chicago Bears. So both teams are going to be upset and don't want to go 0-2. I just think that, with the Tennessee Titans having a home field advantage and, you got a mad defense, you got Will Levis that has to prove himself that, last week was some big mistakes. I'm going with the Tennessee Titans, I would say 24-17.
Okay, biggest factor. I lied. One more thing.
I think the biggest factor is, number one, is what they do to Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers hasn't done a lot of practice, and he hasn't been in OTAs, and he hasn't been in, camp and all that. But now, he's playing in the game. So if you watch him when he played against the 49ers, his timing was off and, everything was off. So the key factor to this whole game is make Aaron Rodgers, number one, get off his spot. Number two, make him make mistakes. And if you make him make mistakes early and put pressure in his face and he can't step up and make the throws, it's going to be a long day for Aaron Rodgers. Tennessee Titans 24. The New York Jets 17.
There you have it right there. A guy who can be a fill-in for Wesley Snipes in the movie Blade. He gave you his prediction. We'll see what happens.
This is Tavondre Sway, and I'm talking with TD.
All right, back on the break. Talking with TD. You hear Empire State of Mind, so you know what we're doing. We're going to flip through that Rolodex, the ESPN NFL Nation one. And we're going to bring in ESPN NFL Nation Jets reporter Rich Cimini. Rich, what's going on?
Hey, Teron, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Look forward to heading your way this weekend.
Yeah, for sure. It's the reverse, right? Last time I came up there, now I get to return the favor. You can visit my city, man. I'm looking forward to it for sure. I want to get into Aaron Rodgers. You know, obviously, This is a guy that is just – I don't even know how to put it, man. Like, I'm smiling because I would love to be able to cover an athlete like that, a guy who really, just for lack of better terms, doesn't give a beep, you know, and it's just great. It seems so fun to interact with him. He had the comments telling the fan base to relax. First, what's that been like, you know, in this brief period of time covering him, and what is behind the relax part too?
Well, it's been really good covering him. He is a very compelling figure, whether you like him or dislike him. He is no doubt polarizing, but always interesting, never boring. We missed all of last year, of course, so you know, he was out in California rehabbing his injury, so there was a long hiatus in this relationship with the New York media. But since he's been back, you know, this off season and through training camp and the first couple of weeks of the season, you know, he's great. I mean, he gives you thoughtful answers. He's very intelligent. He's never boring. We went through 3 years of Zach Wilson, who was just a cliche machine, you know, one cliche after another. And it's like, I was telling someone today, after listening to Zach do a press conference, I wanted to bang my head against the wall, you know. But with Aaron, it's a thoughtful, insightful stuff. And today someone asked him, because here in New York, Jet fans are very nervous. They're 0-1. They look terrible on Monday night. And so someone asked him about his famous quote from 10 years ago when he told the Green Bay fans to relax. And he gave a different version of that quote today. And I'm not exactly sure what he meant by that. He was talking about walking through the desert and not having water and dancing to bolero music and all sorts of stuff like that. But he was basically saying everyone needs to relax. He just said it in a different way.
Yeah, that's crazy. I guess he has some of that tea before he talked to you guys. I don't know. But you talk about needing water in the desert. And, you know, Garrett Wilson to him is like that, a refreshment, the water in the desert. When you look at Wilson and how they work to get him to football, what have you seen from him that makes him such an outstanding receiver and that connection that he has with Rodgers?
Yeah, well, he is an outstanding route runner, extreme change of direction. Probably the best I've seen anybody do it, at least with the Jets, the way he can change direction. These two guys have worked very hard on their chemistry. There were a couple of days in training camp where it became news because they got into, I don't want to say an argument, but they got into a couple of very heated discussions during practice, going over plays, and you could see that there was some disgust, and that blew up, of course, because, you know, we like to blow things up, and it went viral. There was some video of it, and it went viral. And they both said that we're just passionate guys, just, you know, trying to work on our craft. And so I always thought of it as a positive. I didn't think for a second that they had something negative between them. And then you saw that chemistry manifest itself in the first quarter against the 49ers, where they just marched down the field and he hit him on three straight third down passes. And so they have a really good chemistry. I'm really curious to see how the Titans cover him. You know, they have a really good corner in Snead, who's good at press man, and that's one of the areas where I think Garrett is still working on, and, you know, how to beat press man.
That's great that you mentioned that. We're talking to ESPN NFL Nation Jets reporter Rich Cimini. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's what I did in my whiteboard video. It looked at the way the Jets, you know, they move Wilson around and they work to create matchups. But if you have a guy that travels like Legarius Sneed, then it kind of defeats that. Speaking of guys that travel, on the flip side, Sauce Gardner, I mean, this dude has come in. He's clearly one of the best corners in the league. How have you seen him just be able to just have be so confident and play the way that he does?
Yeah, I mean, he's the first corner in the Super Bowl era to make a first-team All-Pro in his first two seasons. So that tells you something right there. He doesn't get tested a lot. Last year, his targets were pretty low. Teams usually don't go after him. The other night on Monday night, he was only targeted twice. There were no completions against him. He had one pass breakup. He's a really good, he's a long corner. He's not your typical corner just because he's so long. He's 6'3", but yet he's really smooth in and out of his turns. Got those long arms, which just make it really hard for the quarterback to sneak the ball into a tight window. The one thing they do not do with him, he doesn't typically travel with the number one receiver. Occasionally they do it, like on Monday night, he was covering Kittle on some third down situations, but they typically don't. As Sauce has said, he would like to travel with the one, but let's say they have a really good corner on the other side in DJ Reed, and they don't feel that it's necessary to play that style of football.
What about the guys up front? Quinnen Williams, you know, obviously, but you got Jermaine Johnson, you got Will McDonald. Well, I'll get into him next, but when you look at those guys up front, the starters, what have you seen there, and what's the latest with Hassan Reddick?
Well, the defensive line clearly had a bad game against San Francisco. They turned Jordan Mason into a household name, and fantasy owners are like scrambling to their waiver wire to pick him up with McCaffrey hurt. But their run defense was poor. This is a good defensive line, though. I'm going to call it a bad day at the office because Quinnen Williams is a Pro Bowl guy for 2 years running, and Jermaine Johnson's a good player who I think is still getting better. The problem is, you alluded to it, they don't have Hassan Reddick. He's holding out. It's the strangest holdout I've ever covered, and I've been doing this a while, just because they got him in a trade, and he came here all smiles for his press conference, and they haven't seen him since. So there's obviously a deep-rooted contract issue going on here, and the teams are not even talking. I mean, the two sides are not even talking, so I'm not sure when or if he'll ever be here. So that hurts their pass rushing, and they're kind of, their third, fourth, fifth rushers. And you mentioned Will McDonald. He didn't have a good game on Monday night. He's a former number one pick who's still trying to find himself. So it's a defensive line that I would say is a work in progress right now.
Yeah, very much so. And you look at the coaching staff, it's almost like Titans North, man. You got Keith Carter coaching the O-line, Tony Dews, the running back. Even Sean Jefferson, he has Titans ties. And you look at there's one more I want to say, just thinking off the top.
Todd Downing. Yeah.
So how have you seen those guys? Like, how have they been?
Yeah, it's because Salah didn't have a whole lot of connections or ties. Now, he worked with Keith Carter in Seattle many years ago, so that was the connection there. So this is Carter's second year. His first year did not go well. I mean, the offensive line performed poorly. They were injured. There were so many injuries. Players were not happy with his coaching style. As you know, Teron, from covering him, he can be an abrasive guy, kind of an old school get in your face coach. And I know that did not sit well with some of the players here. He has addressed that publicly, saying that he's constantly trying to evolve as a coach. And I think he's toned it down a little bit this year. So that's something to watch. He's also got a much older group this year that he's coaching, with guys like Morgan Moses and Tyron Smith. So it's a different dynamic. And Todd Downing is basically running. He's the quarterback's coach. He's the passing game coordinator. And he's the guy who most often interacts with Aaron Rodgers on a day-to-day basis. So he's got a really interesting position. He's up in the booth during the game, and Nathaniel Hackett calls the plays on the field.
Nice. And when you look just overall at this game coming up, I mean, it's two 0-1 teams. The Jets are a team, though, defensively, they've always been good. And it's been the offense that, that came up short. Obviously, the defense, the whole team came up short against the 49ers. But how has that been just as far as those guys just being able to, you know, keep from pointing fingers and keep from, hey, man, we're doing our job. Why can't you guys do yours? How have you seen that develop over the years?
Yeah, well, the defense has pretty much carried this team for years. I can't even remember the last time they just had a good offense. Probably 2015, which is also their last winning season, if you can believe that. So the defense was awful on Monday night. They've acknowledged that it was just awful. The 49ers are a really good team, and they just exploited the Jets' every weakness. So I really expect a bounce-back performance by the Jet defense this week. That was the proverbial slap in the face on Monday. And so I think they'll be much more focused and much more physical against Tennessee. The offense, I think, was just rusty against the 49ers, and I do think they'll continue to get better. I thought Rodgers was... I would say he was okay. I mean, he clearly was a little rusty, you know, coming off the long layoff with the injury, but I do think he'll get better on a week-to-week basis. So I think they're going to get a very determined Jets team on Sunday, a Jet team, I think on paper, I think we would probably all agree that is better than Tennessee. But I do expect a close game, though. I do. I don't think the Jets are really capable of blowing anyone out now. And Tennessee, I know they'll be fired up. It's their home opener. They did some really good things against Chicago, as you know, and they just somehow lost that game. And so I think you're going to get two angry, determined teams on Sunday.
Last thing, Rich, you covered the Jets for quite some time. You were there, Jamal Adams and everything. I asked him on Wednesday, you know, about playing in this game, and he said, "I'll be there." Period. Covering well, Jamal Adams, like, hey, tell me about this guy. Like, what are some of the things you think about?
Well, I mean, he had a couple of really, really good years with the Jets. His second and third years, he was an All-Pro safety who was really more of a box safety. He was never good in pass coverage. That's never been his forte. He was just excellent at near the line of scrimmage, especially when they used him as a blitzer. And they traded him because he just wanted to be not only the highest paid safety, he wanted to be the highest paid defensive player on the team, which at the time was C.J. Mosley. So he was looking for about $18 million a year. And the Jets wisely traded him, and they got two first-round picks for him. It was the greatest trade they've made in probably decades. They got two first-round picks, and they turned those picks into Garrett Wilson and Elijah Vera Tucker, two starters. Mm-hmm. And so Jamal was a very headstrong player who they brought in, who they thought was going to change their culture, but actually ended up maybe hurting the culture. He was very divisive and outspoken in the latter months, you know, demanding a trade and being very outspoken on social media about how he wanted to get out. And so they had to trade him, and they did, and they got an enormous return for him. And I don't even know if there's any players left on this team who played with him. I think Quinnen Williams might be the only guy left. So it seems like a long time ago, and a chapter that I think most Jet fans, let's put it this way, he's not remembered fondly by Jet fans simply because of the way his exit was so messy.
There you have it right there. Ladies and gentlemen, that's ESPN NFL Nation Jets reporter Rich Cimini. Rich, we appreciate you. We'll definitely catch up Saturday. Give me a call, man. Give me a call. We can catch up Saturday, and we'll for sure see each other on Sunday on game day.
All right. Always a pleasure. And we'll see. Are we going to get some rain? I think this might be a wet little wet and wild with some rain coming through there, so that might make things a little more interesting as well.
Oh, it definitely could. These are two teams that, you know, will be able to run the football. So, yeah, we'll see. It looks like 63% chance of rain, so it might be a sloppy one, man.
Could be sloppy. All right. Well, I look forward to seeing you guys.
Yes,
take
sir.
Care, Teron.
So that was Rich Cimini. I always love talking shop with him, man. He's a veteran NFL Nation reporter, been covering the Jets for quite some time. Funny story about him real quick. Rob Moore, the former Titans receiver coach, he covered Rob Moore when Rob Moore was in high school.
What?
Sheesh. That's going back quite some time. But yeah, man, shout out to Rich Cimini. Shout out to Nicholas Petit Ferrer taking the time. Tavondre Sweat, a.k.a. Meatloaf.
Meatloaf.
Yes, sir. David James Parker over here making it happen, man. Appreciate you guys. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. Definitely make sure you check us out. Whiteboard Wednesday, we got a new one up. So peep that. We'll have stories on ESPN.com. You'll hear me all over 102.5 The Game. This is what we do, man. Never stop recording. Never stop writing. Bringing it, bringing it, bringing it. Also, check us out. The Titans Extra on Saturday at 10:35, TD's takeaway. So, or TD's take rather. So we'll keep it coming to you. But again, check us out, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, anywhere you get your fine listening materials. Search Talking with TD, subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you.